CBSI in the world, I'm John Batchelor. The headline, CNN, Pakistan summons U.S. ambassador after President Biden calls country, quote, dangerous for having nuclear weapons, first graft. Pakistani officials said they had summoned the U.S. ambassador to the country following recent comments made by President Joe Biden that doubted the safety of Pakistan's nuclear arsenal. I welcome Hussain Haqqani, my colleague. He's at the Hudson Institute, formerly the ambassador from Pakistan to the United States. Mr. Ambassador, thank you. The first thing is process. Summoning an ambassador is very careful language used for several hundred years, I believe. What exactly does it involve, given this era of instant communication? What is it meant to convey? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Summoning an ambassador is a formal process in which you are registering your protest over something. It's a way of saying that we consider this very, very seriously. We protest it. We do not like it. It's not the same thing as, say, for example, the recall of an ambassador, which basically is the first step towards downgrading a diplomatic relationship. It's just a way of protesting. The reason why the Pakistani government called the U.S. ambassador is because Pakistan is highly sensitive about its nuclear weapons. Its population is highly sensitive. And right now, there is a wave of anti-Americanism in Pakistan. And although the government wants to have good relations with the U.S., it also does not want to look like so weak that it cannot tell the United States that it is unhappy or upset over something that the U.S. has done.
The puzzle then about the president's remarks, one of the most dangerous nations in the world is a quote, Pakistan. It has, quote, nuclear weapons without any cohesion. Pakistan is a nuclear armed state. India is a nuclear armed state. This dates from the late 20th century. Has something changed in these last weeks or months? Some instance of instability in the new government by Shahbaz Sharif, to your knowledge?
I don't think that President Biden's remarks are about the safety or security of Pakistan's nuclear arsenal. They are about the instability of Pakistan's politics. The president was ad-libbing. He didn't have a text. He sometimes says things in a manner in which they can be misconstrued. In this case, when he says they have nuclear weapons without cohesion, he's not talking about the nuclear weapons not having cohesion. It is about the country not having cohesion. And so what he's saying essentially is that this is an unstable country with nuclear weapons. As far as the security and safety of Pakistan's nuclear arsenal is concerned, the George W. Bush administration worked very closely with the Pakistani authorities to put in place a nuclear command and control system that the United States is comfortable with. That system is still in place. There is no likelihood at this moment of Pakistan's nukes going loose. And so therefore, the lack of cohesion President Biden is referring to is the lack of cohesion of the country, not just of the nuclear arsenal.
I note that the foreign minister of Pakistan, Bilawal Bhutto Zardari, said that he was surprised by Mr. Biden's remarks. Were you surprised, Hussain?
I wasn't. I think that it was a comment about Pakistan's politics. Should it have been made? Not necessarily. This is not a moment to comment on Pakistan's politics for the United States president, because it is not something that is on a high priority for the president. But he was talking in general. He also made comments about Hungary and Italy, if you see the same remarks. The Pakistani reaction is essentially because of domestic factors. And I think that they have misconstrued the remarks. They have exaggerated them in the process, instead of saying, hey, these are the remarks of somebody who's about to turn 80, speaking without a text, and he has just said something about our political instability rather than just about our nuclear weapons. They instead focused on the nuclear aspect of it and thought that this is a comment on the lack of safety of Pakistan's nuclear arsenal.
Thank you. We move to the Pakistan politics you reference. This is a Bloomberg report. Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan won the majority of seats in by-elections, building momentum in his campaign to pressure the six-month-old government to call an early national vote. Please explain what it means to win a by-election and what it indicates in the political conversation.
A by-election in a parliamentary democracy is the same as a special election for Congress in the United States. A seat becomes vacant and somebody, and a new election is held to offer a replacement for the member of parliament who has resigned, died, or otherwise been removed from office. In Pakistan, there is a legacy from independence from India that a person can run for more than one seat in parliament. And of course, if they win two seats, then they have to vacate one to be able to represent only one. That necessitates another by-election. So Imran Khan, so there were several seats of Imran Khan's party's members who resigned, where there were by-elections. Imran Khan chose to run for almost all of those seats, again, to precipitate a second by-election after he has to resign all the seats that he has won. The purpose is to show that I'm still popular. Now, it does show that he's popular, at least among his supporters, but it does not necessarily reflect on what the outcome of the next general election might be, which is likely to be held next year. The reason being, these are seats his party won in 2018. His party members resigned because he wants to create this situation of constant elections, constant campaigns, and therefore constant assertion of his popularity. His party had went into these by-elections, eight seats. He has come out with six. He has lost two. But still, the headline remains that he won because he won six seats. And so he'll keep trying to do that as a way of pressuring the government into holding fresh general elections, because he thinks an early election will benefit him, whereas a later election may erode some of the popularity, bring back normal politics in which people vote on the basis of each seat rather than on the basis of some momentum, national momentum. And he can't run for 200 seats in parliament next time. So this is more of a media gimmick, which all populist politicians do all over the world. It is a bit like some of the things President Trump does, you know, some of his lawsuits, etc., are not meant to get a legal decision. They are meant to get headlines. And this is also one of these things that Imran Khan is doing to get headlines.
So it's a political conversation that he's having with his own supporters. I presume that's the support is the major audience. He has to keep feeding that audience that I have momentum. That would
absolutely. He's not winning over anybody. He's just making sure that he doesn't lose any support either. And by going into by-elections in seats that his party already holds, right, and then winning more seats to vacate them to get another round of by-elections is just a way of using the system to try and show that he still remains popular with his base.
And this pressure that is coming to bear for early elections, the Sharif administration, is it under obligation to hold early elections and in any fashion?
It is under no obligation to hold early elections. It's a bit like Britain. You see all the opinion polls showing that the British Prime Minister is very unpopular. She has a bit of a revolt in her own party. But there is no legal or constitutional reason why she should hold early elections. The same applies in Pakistan. As long as a majority in parliament supports the government is under no obligation to hold an early election.
Now, the catastrophe that continues to prey on the people of Pakistan, this is a nation of 220 million people, and half of it was, or a large part of it, was under severe attack by floodwaters, destroying the crop, dishoming people. The headlines from Islamabad now, from AP, more than half of the flood victims in Pakistan's worst-hit Sindh province have returned to their homes over the past 3 weeks as the waters there gradually receded. That sounds like a positive step, but is there food? Is there a crop? Is there a provision for the people returning to their homes, Hussein?
John, one-third of Pakistan's 220 million people were affected by the floods. A large number became homeless. These are poor subsistence farmers. They are farmhands. They were displaced from their lands. The crops were destroyed. There will be downstream consequences of the destruction of crops. For example, the cotton crop being destroyed means that there will now be a problem in terms of providing raw material for Pakistan's huge textile industry, which will mean that Pakistan will not be able to meet its export targets. So the disaster will continue for a while. Now, the people who are returning to their lands, well, they're, again, subsistence farmers, returning to subsistence farming lands, they do not have savings. It is estimated that Pakistan needs billions of dollars for rehabilitation, for feeding these people, looking after their health, and at the same time making sure that they can plant the next crop and get on with their lives. Then there will be the reconstruction of infrastructure that has been destroyed, bridges that have been washed away, houses that have been wiped out. This is going to be a longer process than just farmers who were displaced from their homes, returning to their homes, or to their, at least not to the homes because the homes don't exist, but to the location where the homes were. One more thing, Pakistan is not getting the assistance that is needed. It's getting assistance in millions. The US has given something like 57 million. Britain has given 25 million. China has given 50 something million. That is not what Pakistan needs. Pakistan needs billions. And unfortunately, the political instability, which is being fed further and further by Mr. Imran Khan, is impeding the prospect of large-scale international assistance.
Hussain Haqqani of the Hudson Institute, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.